Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. I'm your host for today, Isaac Beal. Today we're going to talk about music in Central Iowa this summer. We'll be hearing from Ames musicians Brian Dudley, Paul Hertz, and Nate Logsden about some of the many music festivals coming up. Brian runs the Ames record label, Nova Labs, and the Spacement Recording Studio. Paul hosts the KHOI local music show, Ready Ames Fire, and Nate is one of the founders of Maximum Ames Records and the Maximum Ames Music Festival and works at Hoyt Sherman Place, a concert space in Des Moines. They all play numerous local bands and have been involved with local music for many years. And in the later part of the show, we will have our monthly visit with Keith Morgan from the Story County Emergency Management Agency. Keith will be joined by Norma Newton from the local organization that does search and rescue missions when people are missing. Let's start with music. There's a lot of festivals throughout the summer in this area, but we'll start with the big one, 8035, which is this weekend in Des Moines. Nate, which 8035 artists are you looking forward to the most?
One artist I'm really looking forward to is a band from Minneapolis called Lizzo, and that's an R&B band that I've just been hearing a lot about, and so they're kind of up and coming, and I've been looking forward to getting a chance to see them live. Heard a lot about their live show. Also, some good friends of mine, Twins, they're opening up the main stage on Saturday of 8035, and those guys have just really done an awesome job of just growing their sound, growing their career. They just had a new album come out last week. And they're going to be celebrating with a main stage performance. So there's so many, but that's just two of the ones that I'm definitely planning on catching.
Brian, what about you?
I'm a big fan of the Decemberists, actually. We're one of the big headliners. Mm-hmm. We've seen them a couple times before, and really stoked for their show. Other than that, a lot of the local bands are really the highlights for me. Tires are going to be playing, Easy Fruit.
Odd Pets. There's a number of local bands on there that I'm not as familiar with as I would like, but some of the ones I am, Goldblum's, Sires, Courtney Krause, Green Death. This is some music from Green Death, some metal in the Des Moines metal tradition started by Slipknot.
I'm Isaac Beal, and I'm here with Brian Dudley, Paul Hertz, and Nate Logsden, members of the Central Iowa music scene. We're currently talking about the upcoming festivals here in Ames. So what do you guys think that these festivals around Ames add to the whole music scene for the area?
They add a lot. They add a great opportunity for music fans as well as for musicians. They contribute to the local economy. They bring a large number of patrons out for a cultural activity, and they put them either in the vicinity of local businesses or they bring them into a local business. They provide opportunities for local sponsors to combine their brand with culture and music and art. And they give employment opportunities to musicians, and to sound technicians and to, stage technicians and lighting technicians. And, they directly contribute to our culture, but also a lot to our economy.
And if you're in a local band, it's a great opportunity. You can open for nationally touring acts and things like that. Which is great. You don't get that in very many places.
Yeah, that's true, definitely. Do you guys know what it takes to, help put these on? How to set it up? How much work is that exactly?
It's a lot of work.
A lot.
It's a lot of work.
Yes, it varies a bit depending on the scale of what you're going to do. Brian was talking about Zeitgeist a bit, and this is what's coming up at the theater at the Social Club is the, I'd say the largest scale venue it's ever been. And it started out in a basement, not as much involved as when you've got a multiple venue festival or one that, that takes over a whole park for 2 days. All of us here have helped start up music festivals, and there's different scales to them. And I would add to what Nate was saying about the benefits of the music festivals that, it's a way to just unleash the creativity, especially at the smaller scale. There's, Zeitgeist, which has been going strong, providing a really, eclectic, specialized place to hear the sort of stuff you wouldn't be able to hear elsewhere. We've got the first dedicated hip-hop festival coming up in Des Moines. It's also at the Social Club this August, first weekend of August, I believe. It's called Fresh Fest. Mm-hmm. It's organized by Mark Hayes, who is also playing at 8035. And then we've got a long-running festival out in the country by Boone, Shagstock.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Shagstock is a festival put on by our friends, and it's mostly put on by the guy that is the lead singer in a band called Obsidian's Dream, and they have just grown every year out on his property. They have they've built a stage, they've built like sort of a side area where they can have vendors and things like that now, and people just come and camp and grill all day long. The wife of one of the band members cooks food now and has sort of like a little cafe grill sort of area going on there. And last year it got to be a little bit too big, so they're scaling back a little bit this year and just giving each band a little bit more time to play and stuff like that. But it's complete do-it-yourself sort of ethics. They're throwing this on themselves. I mean, they're doing it just out of the sheer love of it, you know, which is amazing.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. When did that start?
That one's been going on at least 6 or 7 years. It's really kind of taken off in the last couple. They had 1 year they did it, Regbar went right by the guy's house, and that was sort of like the kickoff year for it, where they had done it a couple years and it was just a few family and friends kind of a thing. But they had 1 year that was Regbar and it just went nuts, and they really liked that. They thought it was a lot of fun. Yeah. So they just started growing it from there.
That's pretty cool. When is that again?
That one's July 21st, so that one's coming right up.
Paul, you mentioned Fresh Fest coming up in August, and I guess it's pretty interesting to me about the hip-hop scene growing around in Iowa, because me and Des Moines booked Drake and Future coming, so that's pretty crazy. Do you guys know anything about that growing scene at all, particularly? Or
Well, it's as far as the scene goes, I'm not as familiar as I should be. I know, I guess, the most about Mark Hayes, who's the guy who's hosting it, and he's done a lot of more socially conscious hip hop. But there's also a number of collectives. There's Media Fresh, which is playing on what they call the Generation Z stage at 8035, which is focused on high schoolers and sometimes even younger. That one has been going on out of some Des Moines high schools for a few years now. I think keeps on adding some new members. And it's something which I think has a lot of opportunity for growth, because we have a lot of hip-hop fans here in Iowa, but not as many places for the local hip-hop artists to really shine. And it's a hip-hop festival, and it's Fresh Fest, and it's focused just on the local artists.
Okay.
We've certainly got some big names coming through. Nas is one of the headliners for 8035. But the local scene does a lot too.
Okay. Do you have any more music samples for us?
Absolutely. At 8035, there's a brass band, which I'm excited about, which I just really recently found out about, called Lucky Chops.
Okay.
They're not local, but, yeah, they're really exciting.
I'm Isaac Beal, and I'm here with Brian Dudley, Paul Hertz, and Nate Logsdon, members of the Central Iowa music scene. Either of you guys know a little bit about the history of 8035 then, how that became about?
Yeah, this is the ninth year of it, and I think there's a guy in Des Moines, Amadeo Rossi, and he's the owner of the rock club down there, 8035, Vaudeville Muse.
Okay.
And he kind of spearheaded an operation with a group of people in Des Moines to fund this, to create a space for it. There was a lot of movement towards it with like the visioning of the Greater Des Moines Partnership of having these type of cultural events in the Western Gateway Park where it takes place, and they were in the process of transforming that into a cultural space and building this sculpture park, etc. And they had an extremely successful first year 9 years ago, and they've been able to just establish a really, really well marketed, really, really world class event from that strong foundation.
Isaac, I have some music from that band Nate's excited to see queued up.
Let's hear it.
This is the Minneapolis band Lizzo.
I'm Isaac Beal, and I'm here with Brian Dudley, Paul Hertz, and Nate Logsdon, members of the Central Iowa music scene. Nate, you're one of the founders and organizers of the Maximum Ames Music Festival. When and where is it happening this year?
The dates this year are September 15th through the 18th, so that's a Thursday through a Sunday right here in downtown Ames. KHOI is actually one of the venues. Unlike 8035, which is happening this weekend, which has a lot of big stages on the street.
Mm-hmm.
Maximum Ames is a bookend in the sense also of being kind of the exact opposite kind of festival. It's a bunch of small stages indoors, all within walking distance, within downtown Ames, in a curated program that will take music fans from venue to venue, into all different kinds of spaces, all within the historic downtown district here in Ames.
We could go sort of like chronological. One of the earlier acts for some of the music that I did some clips for is BJ Fleming. She's playing at the Ames Public Library.
And this is for Maximum Ames in September.
Yep.
I'm Isaac Beal, and I'm here with Brian Dudley, Paul Hertz, and Nate Logsdon, members of the Central Iowa music scene. So, Brian, what can you tell me about the festivals coming up that you'll be involved with?
There's a couple of them that are coming up. There's a Zeitgeist, which is a noise festival. That's August 7th down at the Des Moines Social Club in the Come and Go Theater. And it's a little difficult to describe. You really have to bring, like, an open mind to that one with open ears. It's really – it's not your normal, probably, music festival. They have there's a ton of acts that are on the bill. It starts at, like, 1 o'clock in the afternoon and goes until it's finished. Each act will end up playing about 20 minutes each. Some of the acts have names that you can't really say on the air. And, like, they all, like, do it's largely improvisation. People, like, come in. They don't play, like, songs per se. They play, like, there's guitars and bass and, like, you know, then it's generally through a lot of effects pedals and things like that. Occasionally you'll have, like, drummers and things like that. Our friend Paul's playing at it. He's doing a set at it. And it just, you know, it's all over the map. But it's very rapid fire. About every act will play about 20 minutes. There'll be a short break, and then the next act will just jump right in. There's no vocals or anything like that. It's all instrumental.
Well, sometimes they add in things, but no, there's no lyrics.
And where's that again?
At the Come and Go Theater in the Des Moines Social Club.
And when will that be?
It's August 7th.
This is Local Talk on KHY Community Radio. I'm your host, Isaac Beal. If you've been tuning in, you've heard us speaking about the upcoming music festivals, Sear and Ames. And so, Nate, you know quite a bit about Maximum Ames, and I heard the lineup was just recently released.
Yes, last week we released the lineup as well as the schedule, which is on MaximumAmes.com.
Okay.
Just really, really proud of the lineup and the schedule this year, because I think every year we refine our process of, you know, creating a flow from venue to venue and from show to show to create this really kind of magical experience of kind of touring downtown Ames through music. Mm-hmm. And I think this year is going to be the smoothest flow through that experience and have just a really broad range of a variety of music for people to enjoy. Also, one of our themes for the event this year is just inclusiveness and diversity. I think that's something that you're going to really pick up on as you travel through Ames. For instance, one of our headliners is it's a very rare opportunity to see this band. They've been around since the 70s. They don't play shows very much anymore. It's called Lavender Country. Okay. And they made a self-titled album in 1973 called Lavender Country, and it's recognized as the first openly gay country western music ever. And so they're a groundbreaking talent that's going to be right here in Ames. One of the performances that's going to be here in the KHOI studio is a transgendered singer-songwriter, Baby D.
Okay.
So that kind of, again, reinforces our theme of inclusiveness and variety and diversity. But there's over 100 acts over those 4 days, all in a dozen venues in downtown Ames, all within walking distance. And so you can kind of go and have a sampling of not only a wide variety of music, but also a wide variety of the spaces and locations of our historic downtown district.
What are some of those locations that they'll be playing at around here?
Mm-hmm. So they range from art galleries like the Octagon Center for the Arts and Inkblot Studio to coffee shops like Vinyl Cafe, okay. Clubs, DG's Tap House, bars like Dino's and London Underground, radio station, KHOI Community Radio, civic spaces like Ames Public Library, and more.
That's pretty cool. Show off the downtown for sure there.
Definitely.
And then, Brian, you had some local bands you want to talk about?
Yeah, there's a ton of local bands playing it. I'm most familiar with the Nova Lab showcases that Max Ames is generously letting us do. We get to do two showcases for that, one Friday, one Saturday. And the Friday night one, we were also generously given one of the headliners of the festival, Dressy Bessie, which is, like, incredible. I love that band. I've seen him a number of times. We get Jordan Malin and the Thermal Detonators are going to play. We've got Dr. Murdoch playing, who are also playing at Shagstock too. There's mm-hmm. a little bit of crossover between the festivals and stuff. It's really neat that we get to have this in our own city. Ames gets to have its own festival,
yeah.
Which is amazing to me.
That's pretty cool. Do you guys have any, like, favorite memories or performances, say, from, like, any of the past festival seasons? Hard question.
I definitely do. I don't know. I don't. Did you have something in mind, Paul?
Oh, I'm narrowing it down.
There's so many. I mean, of moments that have just really given me chills. Like, I'll highlight two in particular. Like, one actually happened here at KHOI. There's kind of a clip of it on YouTube that gives a bit of a sense. But it was a few years ago, right in the Pantorium area, right adjacent to where we're sitting right now. It was Sage Francis, and it was just there was something really chilling and cutting about this show. Like, before he was playing, like, all the lights were turned up, and then when he got on stage, he asked all the lights to be turned off, but it was right when the sun went down, so he's kind of like in the dark, and he comes out like wearing this cape, and everyone's taking pictures, so it was like strobe. And then he, a lot of people that were there were like really, really hardcore fans of his music, so they really knew the lyrics. He's a rapper, and they really, really knew the lyrics. And so there was this just incredible feeling of just like being in this secret, private, little den of, darkness, and people singing along, knowing every one of his lyrics, and he was just crushing it. I mean, he was standing this far from people's face, just inches away from where you were standing.
Oh, wow.
And people are hanging on his every word, and it was one of the most visually and emotionally memorable experiences I have. And another one that I always comes, first to my mind is the first year of Maximum Ames Music Festival. We used to do it in campus town and downtown. Mm-hmm. So 2 days in campus town, 2 days in downtown, and there was a venue over there that doesn't even exist anymore. There was an all night electronic music dance party, and it was headlined by this band from Fairfield called Utopia Park, and it was something must have been in the air. Maybe it was a full moon or something, but it was the just most wild, out of control, loving, just sweat pile of people dancing I've ever been a part of. And I actually, while all the dancing was going on, I found myself holding hands with this girl, and I later ended up marrying her and having kids with her. So that literally changed my life.
That's a pretty good memory.
It was on the first night of the first year of Maximum Ames Music Festival, so that is one that I'll always have.
That's crazy. Any of you guys top those?
Of course not. Of course not. Gotten to open for some great bands. As a member of Jordan Mailand and the Thermal Detonators, we got to open for the Zombies at the City Auditorium, and that was
a great show.
That was, that really was. Just getting to see some of the touring acts that come through Ames at Max Ames every year now. There's a couple of them now, and they're coming back. It's always great to see them. All of us here have played in Mumford's at some point, and Mumford's went on a tour with the Depaysement from Japan, and they're back again this year. That's always it can't not be memorable what they do.
Yeah.
They've become a Maximum Ames favorite, and it's really cool that we have like local bands playing, but we also have a band flying in from Tokyo, Japan.
That's pretty nice.
That's just an example. I mean, we have bands coming from all over town, all over the state, all over the country, all over the world.
Right.
And it's all to this relatively small event in a quaint, charming, historic downtown in the middle of Iowa. And so that's the experiential part of this event, is that it puts our local music fans in face-to-face contact with talent from their community, but also from all over the world, and in the context of the spaces of our beautiful downtown.
Let's hear some of that music from Japan. This is the Depaysement.
Coming
with all these, like, the bands coming in from all over, what do you guys have to do as, like, for, like, outreach to get in contact with them? How does that all happen?
It's a year-long process of visioning the bands that we want to have, making a list of bands that, you know, we think would fit really well into our program, that would fit really well into our message and our ethos, that kind of fit the story of Ames, and then contacting them. I'm just reaching out to their booking agents, negotiating with their agents, figuring out their travel details and their logistics. And, you know, it's really about communication. Booking is truly just communication and logistics, like right. So many things in business are. But it's a year-long process that we start immediately after the festival ends. We start planning on the next year, and we start reaching out to bands based on you know, what we think we can tell a story with. And like artists like we have this year, like Lavender Country, like I mentioned, DJ Yella of NWA. We got, like, you know, he's in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. There's a movie about him and everything. You know, we reached out to him and because we thought, you know, you mentioned the local hip hop scene earlier, and we thought, you know, we want to have the local hip hop scene interfacing with the history of hip hop.
Right.
And so we want to create a physical location where that is actually happening in real time. You know, and the same with Lavender Country, our other headliner. You know, we wanted to tell a story about being brave, breaking boundaries, and doing it with music, doing it in a safe and loving and family manner. And so, you know, those are the stories that we wanted to tell. And so we sought artists that helped us tell that story.
Oh, that's awesome. And then speaking of Lavender Country, we have a sample of them.
I'm sighing tonight from summer love of Gypsy John. Though the ice is running rings around the corn, you went rambling in the fall and left this late November squall. Now the sunshine fires are smoldering, my muddy mind is molding, staving on a love gone cold, and the rain keeps rolling on. I'm yearning for blue skies and your big blue eyes of Gypsy John.
That was a sample from Lavender Country, who will be headlining Maximum Ames. And now, for one of the other festivals we've been speaking of was Zeitgeist, and we have some clips from the past festivals there.
Yes, two bands performing there with the kind of typical noise names that you can say on the radio. Sex Funeral and Underwater Escape from the Black Hole. Brian, okay. You picked out these clips. Mm-hmm. Which one shall we hear?
Let's do the Escape from Underwater Black Hole.
Okay.
So that was a clip from a band from Zeitgeist. What was the name again, Paul?
Underwater Escape from the Black Hole.
All right. And Brian, what kind of genre would you say that is necessarily that play at that festival?
They call it a noise festival, but it ends up like sort of like the definition of noise can be pretty loose. it can mean everything from like really, really harsh, actual, just like noise that actually...
But structured noise.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well, yeah. And sometimes unstructured noise.
Yeah, yeah, it's...
Yeah. And what we just heard was like a little bit more like of the ambient variety of noise. So it's pretty cool. There's like some, it's a little bit sort of like free jazz or something like that in some ways. But it's people who a lot of times just get together and just like play with their toys, essentially, you know. But like some of these bands are, they tour all over the place and stuff, and they, you know, there's noise festivals around the country. So we're really fortunate that we get to have one in Des Moines, especially in such a nice venue like that.
That's pretty cool. So you said they play with their toys. Are they like freestyling this on stage, like as they're playing, basically?
Yeah. I don't think I've ever seen, like, you know, it's not like, hey, play that song. You don't see audience members at a noise show usually doing that.
I mean, the songs end up getting names when they put them out on albums.
Right.
But maybe it's going to, oftentimes they do tape releases and it's just, well, there's side A and there's side B and they're both 20 minutes long.
That's pretty cool. They're living in the moment then.
Yeah.
And then we also have some stuff from 8035 now.
Yeah, I'd mentioned Mark Hayes earlier. He's playing both 8035 and organized this Fresh Fest for the first time. And since we're talking about the hip-hop scene again and again, figure we should actually hear some of the music from
right.
it.
Follow the leader, now them hip bro perfect for my beat. Feeling like I sleep, perfect in my sheets. She get whatever she wants and she knows. But I'm fly when I spoke, she froze. She find out with the school for a bit. Didn't like the way they move, she switched. Now she getting paid off the laptop. Love the way that back drop, thighs right. But you know I love the way the ass drop. Let me see you move, girl. The right meet you, could get you up in the mood, girl. I ain't come alone, I got niggas for your crew, girl. Let your body talk to the drum, make it move, girl. Move, girl. I just wanna see you make it move, girl. Move, girl. I can get you what you want, gotta choose, girl. I ain't no I'm that dude, girl. DJ played your song, you gotta move, girl. Middle girl. Change in the jukebox, let the groove rock. You do rock, then your whole mood get better. You make it out of line, then this crew get wetter. Wetter, who kick better? I ain't got nothing to prove. I wanna see what you can do in them shoes, girl. Let me see you move.
This is Local Talk on KHY Community Radio, and we've been talking with Brian Dudley, Paul Hertz, and Nate Logsdon about the upcoming music festivals this summer. Brian and Nate, thank you guys for coming in and talking to us.
Thanks for having us, Isaac.
Yeah, thank you.
You don't believe in the guy, she got proof right there. She got it. Cannot miss this. Her badass can't get nothing for Christmas. She hear them bongos and she goes swiss, 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 swiss. Look how she working at, working at. Shawty, I just wanna see you working at, working at. What you doing right there? That's perfect now, perfect. Dance like you unemployed, girl. Working at, working at. Doing what you doing, girl. Working at, working at. Doing what you doing, girl. Working at, working at. I ain't got nothing to prove. I wanna see what you been doing in the shoes, girl. Let me see you move.
This is Local Talk on KHY Community Radio, where we explore people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. I'm your host, Isaac Beal, and Keith Morgan is with us now in the studio for his monthly segment. Keith is the Emergency Management Coordinator for Story County. Thanks for coming in, Keith.
Good morning.
Today, you have a guest with you?
I do. I've got Norma here from Star One, our search and rescue team that's right here in Story County, and they do some great stuff, and I thought it'd be interesting for the folks to hear who they are and what they do.
Good morning.
Hi, Norma. Thanks for coming in. So what is Star One Search and Rescue?
Well, we're a volunteer organization that makes itself available to public safety officials to assist with lost and missing person incidents. We provide trained and certified search and rescue resources.
Okay. So what exactly is your mission as for being on the search and rescue team?
Personally or as an organization?
Personally, that might be more interesting.
Oh, okay. Well, personally, I just have kind of a passion to help people that are in need.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of emergency personnel, Keith himself, and, you know, law enforcement and everything else. They are trained for specific activities, but we are kind of like specializing in the skills and the activities for lost and missing people.
Okay. How often do you guys get called to come in and help out?
Well, that varies. We may get called every other month, mm-hmm. and we may go for half a year without getting a call, which is a great thing because that means nobody's gone missing in our area.
Oh, yeah, that's always a plus.
It's always a plus.
So who is all on your team? Like, how big is the Star Line Rescue Team?
Well, we've got about 20 to 30 people on the roster. Okay. They're all across the state of Iowa, and we've got people that have different resources. For example, I have a search horse.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, and we have different people that have different skills. We have people that are really good at kayaking,
mm-hmm.
and so they can search while they're on the water. We have a lot of people that are trained to be ground searchers, i.e. they'll walk around and do their searching on foot. We have people that are trained to be searching from the air if we have an air resource available. So we have a lot of different personnels, are different type of people that will come out and do searching that are trained. We have a level of skill that is required to be in our volunteer group.
Right.
We're certified through the North American Search and Rescue Organization. To be in the office, which is the incident command post,
mm-hmm.
we request that you have at least the search and rescue technician level 3 certification,
okay.
which is mostly book knowledge. So you have an understanding of how a missing person search actually operates.
Okay.
But for the people that are actually out in the field, we require a search and rescue technician level 2, which requires skills and skill testing.
Okay, so how long does that training take, and, like, what does it all entail necessarily?
Okay, well, it usually takes a number of months, a lot of hours, a lot of practice, and that gets you to the point where you are ready to take a test. It's a skills test that we go through to make sure you understand the whole process. And then after that, we, once a month, get together for training to refresh our skills, because if we haven't gotten called for 6 months...
Right. It'll be a little rusty.
Exactly. So we keep our skills honed by going through training with the team on different activities.
You mentioned earlier that you had a rescue horse.
I do.
What other tools do you guys use?
Okay. Well, we've got search dogs.
Okay.
We've got the kayakers, the horse. One of the most important tools, as it were, is our skilled search managers, because when you're in a lost or missing person search, there's a lot of high emotion.
Right.
And so some of the more mundane, quote-unquote, activities like organization or maintaining documentation, or how do you go and look, where do you look, how do you keep that in track, that sometimes isn't at the forefront of somebody's mind. So we have different people that are trained in that type of skill as well.
Okay. So what kind of people can, like, volunteer to be on this team?
Well, anyone can volunteer.
Mm-hmm.
They just have to be willing to be outdoors a lot.
Right.
They have to understand that it could be a long time between searches. They have to have the dedication and the passion to try and help somebody that they may never see.
Right. Do you have an example of any of search missions you've been on that you could talk about?
Yeah.
All right.
We've been on a few. Let me see. Some of the ones that have been locally, for example, we were on a missing individual that actually walked away from one of the local nursing homes.
Oh, wow.
We had an individual that walked away. They were very confused. They were an elderly person, and they were very confused, and they were very upset because it was a marital situation, and, you know, the spouse was in the nursing home, and they walked away from the nursing home. And it was in the middle of the night. A lot of times our searches begin in the middle of the night.
Yeah.
And we had some of the different resources available. That one was a really exciting, positive outcome.
Oh, good.
Where we found the individual. We were concerned because it was getting cold, and the individual had walked away with no shoes and didn't have warm enough clothing to be out overnight. And exposure overnight is always a real concern.
Mm-hmm.
The first 72 hours of a person going missing is always where the greatest need to find them is, because after that, there's a lot of exposure, dehydration issues. And so that was one that was really neat because we had a number of dog teams that were tracking the person. We had a number of ground persons that were out. We had some aerial, another agency had brought an airplane out. Wow. And we found the individual within about 8 hours after we were called, which was really neat.
Is 8 hours, would that be a short shirt?
Short search, yeah.
How long could they take? How long, or from your experience?
Well, some of the ones that you've probably heard in the news, mm-hmm. they've taken weeks.
Right.
We have had some, there was one a number of years ago where we had a student missing in a local Central Iowa college, and we were out searching for almost a week and did not find the individual. They didn't find the individual until the next spring, and they had been deceased.
Sad. So as a volunteer, like you said, you get called during the night, and you have to, they're not always going to turn out good, so you have to be ready for pretty much the unexpected, right?
Yeah, that's exactly it. And there's a lot of emotional involvement with a missing person search because you've got a family that is really distressed. If you kind of put yourself in their shoes, which is one of the reasons that most of us are involved is we understand that you get to that point of, oh my gosh, we can't find them. We don't know where they are because you're going to be looking yourself. And then you start calling in the other agencies. So you know that there's that sense of urgency. You know that there's a lot of emotional involvement and you're bringing your skills to the table. You may not be involved in the final outcome.
Right.
And so you have to be able to deal with the fact that you're bringing your skills to help. But it's not like you're the hero.
Right. Definitely. Is there like a website that people can sign up to if they want to get trained or want to become a volunteer?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, we have a website. It's www.star1.
Okay.
.org.
Okay.
And it gives more information about our organization and it gives a little bit more information as to who to contact to find out about our training and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. There's different people that you can give a call.
Why do you think people should become a member of the Star One Search and Rescue Team?
Well, if you have the passion to help other people and you like being outdoors and you like being involved like that, then you are a candidate that might be interested in that intense training to be a skilled searcher out on the field.
Right.
If you have good organizational skills and you want to help out in the office, that is the type of person that we can really use in the search management incident command post.
Mm-hmm. So, Keith, do you have anything to comment on from, the management side about the Search One Rescue Team?
Well, what they really bring is they multiply all of the other resources. I tell folks that when it comes to emergency response, we can usually get a lot of volunteers the day of the event.
Mm-hmm.
But what I really need are folks like Star One and a lot of the other agencies that I deal with that take the time, their own money, to get themselves skilled and prepared to be able to manage those additional resources we get, spontaneous unaffiliated volunteers. With one of their people leading a team of the volunteers that just show up, they do things right. They they maximize those resources quite a bit. So Star One is invaluable. We get the call, and sometimes it's the leadership of the search itself doesn't realize all the different aspects that they should be looking into.
Mm-hmm.
So they help out with the volunteers, and they help out with our incident commanders, the people that are in charge, by guiding them and directing them and giving them different options on what they should be doing. And usually I'll get the call, and it'll be, we need a search dog. And we usually will send along somebody that has a search dog, but we'll also send along a search manager. Maybe they haven't asked for it, but when they get there, they recognize the value of it. So having folks, like you said, that if they're interested in something like this, if they want to be a part of helping out their community more than just the day of, please get a hold of Star One. If this is something that interests you, get involved. There's all different levels, all the way from being in the mud to being in the command post and doing the paperwork.
So when should you call for someone that you think is missing or, for a certain situation? When should people know to do that?
It's important to call early. Mm-hmm. And the second thing is Star One only works for what we call the incident command. If an individual calls me, they're not deployed for those sorts of things. They need to go to their law enforcement early and say that they have somebody missing. Oftentimes, it's the individual's been missing for 3 to 4 hours, and it's getting dark. Mm-hmm. So now they've really compounded the difficulty in locating that individual, as if they had called early. Law enforcement, again, I'm sure would rather get that call that, hey, this person is missing. We don't know where they're at. This is unusual. And to get the process rolling early so that it can be much more organized and we can utilize daylight and while the scene is still fresh, mm-hmm. They can get in there and start the proper processes to find somebody. Would you agree?
Oh, absolutely. We've been called out a number of times getting our gear ready to go mm-hmm. on the way, and then we'll get called and say, hey, subject's been found. Mm. That's exciting.
Yeah.
You know, that's always a plus. We'd rather go out and not be needed,
right?
Than be needed and not be there.
Because then it's more serious if you actually have to continue to go out, right?
Oh, exactly. Yeah. It's always much better to find the person before we even get there.
Right. What are the most common types of these emergencies necessarily, and how could people maybe prevent them? If there is any way to prevent them, really.
There's a lot of different ways. If you have somebody that is vulnerable to becoming lost, take a few of the extra things to make sure that, you know, watch your children closely, mm-hmm. Check on them regularly, have them know where there are certain places to go to if they become lost, or if they've been away for a while, go to a certain location. If you're going to go out into the woods around here in Iowa,
yeah.
People think, oh, there's no way I can get lost. But you can. Take the basics. If you've got a GPS, take it. Make sure your cell phone is charged up so that you can go on. If you've got cell phone coverage, you could bring up one of the apps and get directions back to your car and make it out that way. If you are going to go out, always dress for the worst case when it comes to weather, because if you do become lost, you may not become lost because you don't know where you're at. You may become lost because you've fallen and hurt yourself,
right.
And you can't get yourself out. So that's where a cell phone would come in very valuable, and also to make sure that you're dressed properly for the weather.
Yeah, my dad used to always tell me, like, during the winter, he'd always, if I wasn't wearing, like, a coat, he'd say, bring one in case your car breaks down.
Exactly.
And I was like, I don't know if that's going to happen, but you should really always take the extra precautions, right?
Yes.
Oh, definitely, yes.
Mm-hmm. So is there anything else you'd like to add about that whole team, Keith?
Been associated with the team since I started. A lot of very motivated individuals. Like she said, I'll call at 2 a.m. in the morning, they'll get generated, and of course, just about at 7 o'clock in the morning, when they're about ready to roll out the door, then we find out that they've been found. And I've never once had a complaint from any of the Star One members on those
right.
kind of situations. So it's great that we have an organization like this. And they're not just for Story County. They have been all over the state.
Wow.
A matter of fact, I get calls from Iowa Homeland Security asking to use these resources. And they don't get any funding from anybody else. Our agency provides a nominal amount of funding to them.
Mm-hmm.
So they need support from the community to be able to continue to provide this service to this county and to the rest of the state.
Can you talk a little bit about how to get involved then with, like, the training and the schedule for that, if people do want to become a part of that?
It's contact them directly.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. You can go to our website. We have an address that you can contact. We have a couple of email addresses for some of our leaders,
mm-hmm.
Our president, et cetera, that you can get a hold of them. Get a hold of us. We are planning to have what we call a boot camp, where we have some of the intense ground skills training.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll go ahead and get a group of people together, and then we have different individuals that have a higher level of skill, and we use those people to help train our new personnel. For example, my husband, mm-hmm. he's really good at map reading, and he's great with a compass. So we use his abilities there to make sure that everybody knows how to use a compass to
right.
get around. Because, again, worst case scenario, if your GPS doesn't work, you can still get yourself out of trouble with
yeah.
a compass.
What other small little techniques should people, like, maybe try to learn for themselves? Or if, as a member of the team, what have you seen that other members have brought forth that helps out?
The big thing that we really, really stress is situational awareness.
Mm-hmm.
Be aware of everything that's around you. Like Keith was making the comment, you sometimes get lost or are missing, not because of the fact that you don't know where you are, but you get hurt. And sometimes you get hurt because you didn't notice that rock or you didn't notice. So when you're out hiking, and again, the same thing with your family members, you know, help them to be aware, teach each other and be support for each other. Our team members support each other. We don't go out by ourselves when we're called out. And so we try to encourage everybody to have that situational awareness, to look up, look down, look all around.
Right. So Keith, what made you want to be involved in this type of work, like search and rescue and emergency situations?
Well, emergency management I got into. I retired from the Air Force, and a lot of what I do is the mundane command and control paperwork kind of stuff. But I was used to doing that. I also, in when I was in the Air Force, part of my duties was indirectly search and rescue. So I have an affinity for Star One because I was trained in aerial search activities on there. And it's there are so many groups out there that are so much more dedicated than I am, because I get paid to do this sort of stuff. They're doing it all on their free time. So it's very rewarding to work with groups and agencies like this to come together. Iowa is great on making sure that they take care of themselves. And I've traveled quite a bit, and it's great to be back where people do look out for each other and take care of themselves.
Well, thank you guys so much for coming in. Is there anything else either of you would like to add?
No, as, if you can help out Star One, please get hold of them.
Yep.
If you're interested, give the boot camp a try. I'm sure that they have a lot of folks come in that find out it's not for them.
Yes.
But you'll never know unless you give it a try.
Exactly. And anyone's welcome to come to one of our meetings and ask as many questions as they want. And again,
When are your meetings?
We meet for training generally the third Saturday of each month.
Okay.
And again, contact one of us and we'll let you know where exactly we're meeting. Because we are a volunteer group, we usually have to find different locations to meet. So we'd be glad to let people know. We are a 501c3 organization, so any financial donations are tax deductible. So we are very grateful for that. And anyone that wants to provide time, funds, or anything else, encouragement, prayers, we appreciate all of it.
Okay. Thank you guys so much for coming in.
Thanks.
Thank you.
You have been listening to Local Talk on KHMY Community Radio, where we explore peoples, stories, and events in Central Iowa. Thank you for joining us today. I've been your host, Isaac Beal. Our guests today were Ames musicians Brian Dudley, Paul Hertz, and Nate Logsden, Story County Emergency Management Coordinator Keith Morgan, and Star One Search and Rescue Team volunteer Norma Newton. Local Talk is on KHY at 7 a.m., noon, and 7 p.m. You can also listen to today's entire Local Talk show and all of our past Local Talk shows online at our website, khoyfm.org. That's khoyfm.org. There you will also find information about the people you heard today on the show, along with other contact information and links to the people, places, and things we talked about. Local Talk was engineered by Jonah DeGeest. Our theme song is Backtrackin' by Al Harris and Tom Richards from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley.
We also heard music from BJ Fleming, Green Death, Lucky Chops, Marcaeus, Underwater Escape from the Black Hole, Lavender Country, Lizzo, and The Depaysement.
Local Talk is a radio production training workshop as well as a radio show, which means you can be part of our team of volunteer reporters. We'll train you and you will learn and love more about our community than you ever dreamed. If you would like to join the team as a reporter, contact us at 292-2878. That's 292-2878, or contact us through our website, khoyfm.org. If you enjoyed this show, tell your friends. Remember, your participation as an audience makes KHOI possible and meaningful. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you again on the radio.